It's Britney, bitch.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
Okay, NYG Weekly, second episode of the week. And if you're listening to this, surprise, surprise, you're getting an episode 3 this week. So I don't want to hear any of this NYG every once in a while and NYG whenever we feel like it. We've been consistent this year. We deserve our flowers. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Wise at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. We got Jordan with us this week. You can follow him on Twitter. Jordan, what's your handle? At Jordan Ronan?
Yeah, I'm a simple man. Simple man. Except you misspell my last name. So, okay. You know, just, it's natural. But yeah,
it happens. At Jordan Ronan. Yeah, well, listen,
is there something on ESPN and other platforms?
There you go. That's why I had to specify. You know, I don't know if there's an ESPN tied in there. But go follow Jordan. Subscribe to us wherever we are, iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. And of course, we're brought to you by Mojo. Go download the Mojo app in the App Store, buy stock, sell stock and players, and off we go. Jordan.
Grinders, 3 episodes in 1 week.
Jeez. I know, man. I know.
Must be good and relevant again.
Listen, the content's good when the Giants are bad, and the content's good when the Giants are good. That's how I like to think about it. But when things are good, more people want to listen. So we got to give the people what they want.
Okay.
So here we are. All right. So let's get into it. I don't really know where to start. This is just going to be super casual. I would love to start talking about Kadarius Toney just because, I mean, it's just every week with this guy. It's his left hamstring. It's his right hamstring. He's on Twitter saying, you know, fans don't know what they're talking about. What's the vibe around Kadarius Toney right now? I know Weiss pretty much aced it in one of our season preview episodes, and even like after weeks 1 and weeks 2, he was basically like, I'm not buying this hype. Not even that he wasn't going to play, even if he did play, you know, I'm just not buying this hype. Like, get on the field, stay healthy, show me what you can do. And you know, I think for him, and maybe even a little bit for me, we're sort of less surprised, less disappointed. But I know that there were a lot of fans expecting the Kadarius Toney breakout that are sort of left standing there like, what the hell is going on with this dude?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, that's where we're starting. You're four. I thought it's gonna be rosy.
He's a negative guy, man.
And you start.
We're getting the bad out of the way first. I'm bringing that up because I just went on Twitter, and you know, sometimes like your trends are like personalized towards the stuff that you tweet about and you follow. My number one trend 20 minutes ago was Kadarius Toney.
That just because we're taping this on Wednesday afternoon? Is that just because he didn't practice?
That's Giants fans lamenting that he's not practicing.
It's because Ethan is the most negative guy here, and he has to
get
start
out
with
of here.
He has
get
to start with Kadarius Toney. Go ahead, answer his question, Jordan.
Here's the Toney dilemma, right? He's never on the field.
Ever.
They can't trust him, right? Until he gets healthy. Look, he is there. He does want to play. I mean, I had a nice conversation with him, good 5-6 minutes, a couple weeks ago, just me and him. And that's what he told me. Like, it hasn't been just one hamstring injury, right? There's different parts of the hamstring. So it's technically like 3 different parts. So he actually hurt a different part of the hamstring than he had previously. And then he ended up having, after our conversation, hurt the other leg and his hamstring. So his body's just not cooperating. He's trying. He's working. It's just not happening for him. But like you said, until he gets on the field, proves he can stay on the field, you can't really trust the guy. Even, you know, what do you think of when you think about Kadarius Toney and what he could do on the field? Which game?
Dallas.
Which game? Yeah.
What happened in that Dallas game?
He got ejected. Didn't he get hurt?
He got ejected. So the one game you want to talk about, he still didn't even play the whole game. Yeah. Right? Think about that for a second. So, like, for a variety of reasons, it's just really hard to sit here and trust the guy right now and say he's going to be back. You know, we're going to get something out of him. You just don't know. I don't think the Giants know. I think that's why you heard those rumblings before the season. Like, Joe Shane could sit here and, you know, paint it any way he wants, right? We didn't shop him. Fine. Did you? You have probably had conversations about him, though, right? So just playing semantics on that. They knew there was questions about him coming in. and that they would have to get answered. And so far, still unanswered. If they're answered, they're answered in the
sure.
The answer you guys that you're as Giant fans or the Giants organization didn't want to hear.
Yeah.
But well, there were breadcrumbs out there that were leading in that direction, right? I mean, yes. Everyone was like, the media, you guys are so negative. No. The breadcrumbs were being laid. They were being put out there the whole time. If you wanted to pay attention, the warning signs were there.
Well, I have one other question, because there have been rumblings that even the previous regime wasn't in love with him, right? They traded back and he was there, and they might have tried to trade back again because they didn't love the players that were available. Is there any truth to that? Or have you heard anything in those regards?
Nah, I mean, look, he was not at the top of their list, like, of guys they thought they were going to draft, right?
Sure.
There's no way. I mean, they thought they were going to get Waddle or Devonta Smith. They clearly thought that that was an option. I believe, was it Elijah Vera Tucker who was drafted by the Jets?
ABT. Not far in front. Yep.
I think he would have been the pick if he didn't go. I think it was two picks ahead of them.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Something in that range. I don't remember off the top of my head. But the Giants organization really did like him. I mean, they drafted him there for a reason.
Okay.
It was 19, right? Is that the number?
Something like 20, I think.
20.
19, 20.
I think.
I mean, they picked him there for a reason. He's super 20. Talented. And even last year, like, they saw that talent. They know he's super talented. I mean, there's people there that told me they think he could be in the, you know, talent-wise, could be one of the, you know, in the elite wide receiver range. Like, that's how talented he is. That's how good he is. But there was also, you know, former coaches there that said, hey, I can trust him when he's in the building and we're working with him. I don't know what he's doing when he's on his own, if I can trust him. So there were definitely questions.
Yeah, that's great. Kadarius Toney, awesome. Anyways, Jordan.
No. I don't want you to poo-poo that because we actually got some good insight there. So you're welcome.
There's no amount of insight that could entice you.
You've been on another level, by the way, Weiss. I have to say, the number of people that texted me and DM'd me about your Jets rants last episode, as well as your opinions on the former officials who are now on TV, people were like, oh my God, Weiss is fired up. What's going on with this guy?
Well, here's the thing. Jordan, I for the last couple of years, since, you know, we've exchanged phone numbers, I've sort of used you as like a psychiatrist to take a lot of my anger out with the Giants. Like, I've been legitimately like going through some stuff with this team. They're 4-1. Their biggest win since, I think, that Sunday night game against the Cowboys in 2016. Prior to that, you got to go.
You can make the argument the Super Bowl.
I was about to say, you got to go back to the Super Bowl year. You've covered the team since 2013. You've talked about it a lot since that Minnesota Monday night game in 2013.
Right. Good match.
Josh Freeman.
Josh Freeman special.
Right.
Worst game ever played.
Yes, it was. Is this the best you felt about this organization since you've joined this beat?
A good question. I mean, 16 was a good year. Things were definitely trending in the right direction. At the time, I probably didn't realize it was a little bit hollow. But they had Odell at the time. The dude was a superstar. He was just winning. Like, he was that good.
Mm-hmm.
I thought there were maybe 16 was probably a little bit better.
And he single-handedly won them like 4 or 5 games.
Yeah, because he was so good. You thought they could get a quarterback somewhere, like, you know. You thought the next year they're going to get a quarterback. We know what happened.
Ben wanted
Patrick.
Hey, this is positive.
you can make the argument. Now we're 16. The problem that I have right now getting too excited about where the franchise is, and this is my problem, I'm trying to compare there in 16, is, and it always comes down to it's the NFL, is where's your quarterback situation? Right? If they had a young quarterback who you knew you wanted to build forward with, who's either on a rookie contract or you had him locked up long-term. And okay, if I have Justin Herbert, like, I feel really good, right? I know we're golden. We're in great shape moving forward. I still have a little bit of questions. I mean, I'm sure you'll bring it up at some point, but the Daniel Jones conversation is, we don't have an answer to that right now, right?
Yep.
Who's the quarterback next year? Who's the quarterback in 2 years, in 3 years?
Well, I think, I mean, that's certainly a good question. And Weiss is sort of, here we go with the negativity again. But I don't think, you know, it's our responsibility.
You feel good about the infrastructure, though.
That's where I was going.
Yeah.
The infrastructure is solid now. Joe Shane is obviously more competent than Dave Gettleman at his job. I mean, I thought from day one, I was yelling from the top of the building. I don't know if you guys were with people arguing against the whole, you know, oh, bring back Eli, or, you know, drafting a running back is the right thing. But philosophically, they were so stupid. The moves were not smart. They were not smart moves, just in regards to, do they make sense for the organization, right, in the way you have to build forward. Now Joe Shane seems very competent. I know people are like, go trade for a receiver, get this guy, get that guy. This is the right move. I've been saying they should have done this since 2017. So I'm fully on board with him doing it now. Look, you notice even Landon Collins, guess what? Veteran minimum. Every guy, like, they are steadfast. Yeah. They are not going
They're to disciplined.
Very disciplined.
Money forward and, you know, sabotage their future even the slightest. Like, and this is the right move. They're not near winning a Super Bowl. No matter how much. I mean, it's a great start. It's fun. Playoffs are a possibility, but you don't mortgage anything moving forward.
Correct.
Right? You enjoy what you have. You make the best with the pro personnel department. Kudos to them. They're filling out the bottom of the roster and making it work. I look at it sometimes, and the coaching staff too. You feel great about Dable, Wink Martindale, Mike Kafka. I mean, total confidence in them at this point. The fact that all of them are making it work with what sometimes I look at and be like, I look at it on the field in practice and I'm like, what are they working with here, you know?
And yeah, you look at the injury report from practice today and it's like, holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, look, Marcus Johnson, right?
Yeah, he played 56% of snaps or something. He played the most
snaps of any wide receiver straight off the practice squad.
Yeah.
That's not supposed to happen. That's like ass backwards. Think about that for a second. The practice squad guy played more than the guys on the roster.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. And I think you bring up a good point talking about filling out the back end of the roster, because obviously they lack high end talent at basically every position except running back and left tackle. You can make the argument now with Dexter Lawrence breaking out, the interior is really strong, and Kayvon's a rookie, so that's great. But with all these young guys and guys who really aren't even supposed to be here and getting playing time, playing well, it gives you a lot of confidence. These guys can identify talent, and once they're able to bring in their guys at those high-end picks and spend money in free agency in a year or two, like, you gotta be confident. I mean, they did such a good job at the back end.
Yeah, I mean, you got to feel good about what they've done so far, what their ability to get the most out of the talent that they have.
Yeah.
But the big question is, that's going to hover over this team, and it has now for years, really since that 2016 season, because that 2016 season, as great as it was, that's when you first really saw the Eli decline.
Yes.
Right? Like, at that
they were
that
winning point, because of their defense and Odell.
Like, they're winning, but something's just not right here offensively. And that was sort of the beginning of that right there. I mean, I guess you could say, you know, 13 was an awful year too, but that he was still fairly young at that point. Nate, he showed that they could turn it around then. And he had a good 15.
Really good 15.
14, 15. And then 16, it started to go the other way. So that's really the question that's hovered since then is, you know, where's their quarterback position? Do they have it right? I mean, do you believe in Daniel Jones? I think Daniel Jones is a quality starting quarterback in the NFL. This is my opinion. Do I think he's a top 10 guy? No, I do not. But if he has the right pieces around him, is he a quality quarterback? Is he like somewhere in that 10 to 16 range? I think that's what he can be. But is that good enough where you want to invest in that and move forward?
Yeah, I mean, you answered the question before I could even ask it, but I'm curious I don't even know how to phrase this properly, but I'll say what the young kids say, the vibes in the facility around Daniel Jones in the quarterback position. Because Weiss and I were joking a lot after the first few wins. You sort of look in the background of the Dable's post-game speech, yes. and you see Joe Shane there with his arms crossed, like, God damn it, like, this wasn't supposed to happen. And you know, before the season's even starting, he's the first trip he goes on is to Ohio State, probably to scout CJ Stroud. So
it's funny, you know, too, because we make the same jokes like a bunch of people on the beat, like that, because it is that it, the pictures are very funny.
Yeah. So each week it just seems like, oh, this was Daniel Jones' best game as a Giant. The week after that, oh, this was Daniel Jones' best game as a Giant. Week after that, same thing. Like, it's tough because the roster is so devoid of talent, but what, like, what does he have to do, if anything? Not picking up the fifth year option was sort of a telltale sign from the get-go. And a guy as smart as Joe Shane probably understands the importance of having a quarterback on a rookie deal, being able to sort of ride out next year with some of the bad contracts that they have, like Leonard Williams cap hit. If, I mean, I assume that they're going to get rid of Galladay, you know, but they're going to have some dead money there. But
that's, you pretty much lock that in. Come on,
but
lock that in.
But it's, where do they go? Like, what does he have to do, if anything, to show that he is the guy moving forward?
You know, the best way to pressure the organization into wanting to keep him?
Winning.
Well, sure.
It's winning.
But even Joe Shane knows, if they win like
10 games, you think John Mara is just going to be okay with getting rid of him and Saquon because they really need to build moving forward?
Well, to John Mara's credit, he's been really good at letting Joe Shane do his job and staying out of the way and not saying stupid shit to you guys. But at the same time, Joe Shane understands that you cannot consistently win in the NFL with a quarterback who's throwing for 230 yards and zero touchdowns every week.
I know Joe Shane wasn't there originally in Buffalo, right? I think he came a little later after Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, if my memory serves correctly.
Something like that.
I'll look it up while you're.
Yeah, I don't think it was a full year. It was like a couple months later.
Yeah, I think it was the next year, but I don't think. Yeah,
was it the next football year? Whatever. Yeah.
The bottom line is, so in Buffalo, they made the playoffs.
Right.
He arrived in Buffalo. First year was 2017.
Right. That was the Allen draft.
No, Allen was the following year. Allen was 2018.
So he was in the building for Josh Allen. Yeah.
Okay. So Brandon Bean, what did they do there? You know, obviously Joe Shane is his underling, but they make the playoffs in Buffalo, first year under Sean McDermott. Nobody thought they had any chance to make the playoffs. I'm almost positive they went 9-7. Had a good surprising year. Their quarterback at the time was Tyrod.
Right.
They said, we need our quarterback. You know, move on from Tyrod. You know, they get Josh Allen. It's all, you know, written. That story's written.
So the narrative is there. Yeah.
I mean, Joe Shane has this blueprint, right, that he was there. So it would make sense for him to follow that here, right? Unless Daniel Jones blows him away. Now, Daniel Jones is an impressive guy. He has the size. He has an arm strength. Look at his legs. His legs are obviously really good. He's smart. He's tough as nails. I don't think anyone's going to argue how tough he is, right?
He is a tough son of a bitch.
Yeah. No one's going to argue how tough he is. There's a lot of things to like. And every coach that comes here, I legitimately, like, when I talk to them on the side, they're like, we just have to get things right. Like, this guy could be good. So does he get enticed by that? Does he get intrigued by that? It's possible. The question is, what then is the price? So I think there's some very multi-layered answer to this question.
Yeah, it's not easy.
The number one thing is wins. If you win, let's say they end up winning 10 games, go 10-7 and make the playoffs. You decide to get rid of Daniel Jones as your quarterback. Isn't that, how does that then play in the locker room? That's a little weird, right?
Very.
They like this guy. He's talented. And you get rid of him? So I think there's just a lot of things that have to factor in that equation. And I think the more they win, the harder it is to get rid of. Would you guys do Daniel Jones 2 years, $40 million?
Not two. I mean, if they win 10 games, truthfully speaking.
You could do 2 years, $40 million, and $30 million of it could be guaranteed for next year or something.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Then you can get off it after that, but he gets 30 guaranteed.
See, I don't think the numbers are there because the personnel is bad at receiver. Like, I think he's gotten better from the last couple of years. I mean, you can see how he's improving in increments. My big thing is, like, there's this timeline where it's like, this is it, right? Like, we can't be like, oh, let's go into the offseason and get receivers and yada, 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 because
you don't want to wind up like the Colts.
Yeah, he's going to be a free agent. At the same time, it's like,
well, the Colts would die for Daniel Jones, by the way.
Of course they would, because they were dumb enough to get Matt Ryan. I mean,
Matt Ryan is
We don't need to get into this. I ranted and raved about the Colts last week. What an abomination.
It's all about the options. Like, what are the other options? Okay, you're picking 18th. How are you going to get from 18 to 5? You talked about Buffalo. Buffalo had two ones that year. They also had a tradable piece in Cordy Glenn, who was a good left tackle that they were able to move up. That part of that whole thing of them going up and getting Josh Allen. So it's about the options. Like, okay, if it's not Daniel Jones, what's the other option? So I can't sit here and be like, yeah, give me Daniel Jones next year, or no, I don't want Daniel Jones, without knowing what my other options are. And if you're winning,
it would have to be trading up.
Yeah. I mean, how much would it cost? I mean, let's say if they make the playoffs, they're picking what? At the earliest 16, right? So let's say they're picking 16 or 17. How do you go from 17 to, I don't know, into the top 10?
9, 8.
Yeah.
7.
And that's if your guy is there, because the Texans are going to need a quarterback. They're probably going to have the first pick.
There's always going to be teams that are drafting quarterbacks.
Yeah, of course.
It sounds to me like there's three premier quarterbacks in this draft. Talking to people. Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Will Levis.
Yeah.
And that those are like going to be the three guys that are at the top. So three premium guys. You probably have to get into like the top 7 or 8. Right. If that's the way it plays out, it's going to take some creativity. We'll see just how smart Joe Shane is, if that's the route that they decide to go. Look, the best case for the Giants is Daniel Jones is the guy. And then they could use all their capital on filling the roster around him.
Right.
Sure. And plus, while you will, if Daniel Jones is the guy, and yes, you will have to pay him, but let's say he has a great rest of the year. You end up paying him $30 million a year. Okay. And I can see your faces right now. The thought of that, like the number sounds crazy, right? But if Daniel Jones is the guy in 3 years, when you're 2 or 3 years and you're like, we're paying the guy $30 million, that's way below market value. Market value of the top quarterbacks is already close to
50 mil. 50? Yeah.
Right.
So like, if he is the guy and you're not going to have to pay him that much right now, because he didn't have that. He's not Josh Allen. He never had the opportunity to turn into even like a fraction of Josh Allen, although he probably never will be. But if you get my point, it's like, if he's that guy, that's the best solution for them. Then they can go and use their assets and fill the roster around. They're going to have a ton of money in free agency. Now, they're not going to spend a ton of money in free agency.
Thank you. Right.
That's not how Joe Shane is going to operate here. He made that pretty clear, at least to me, that there's going to be sporadic, you know, like one or two big moves each year. Build through the draft. Build up young talent. That stock the roster. Then when you get in a situation Buffalo's in now, then you go out and you can make the big moves, right? The Von Millers of the world.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, you know, get Stephon Diggs, trade for him. Like, that was the move. Okay, we need to get to the next level. How do we do
it? Saquon Barkley, that's the other big name, right? Running back coming into the season, I said, hey, I mean, you just play him, you run him into the ground, and if somebody calls and offers you something, you go with it. But then you think about it, and you're like, this team has no skill position player outside of Saquon Barkley. And regardless who the quarterback is next year, especially if it's a young guy, a rookie, you're going to need somebody. I mean, it can't be a Justin Fields type situation. So my question is, what do you do? And obviously Saquon's having a great year. You don't want to take that away. He looks like, you know, one of the more elite offensive players, non-quarterbacks in the league. So what do you do? And my thing was, you know, franchise tag is going to be tough. I don't think it sends the right message in the locker room. You know, you're franchising a leader. I mean, it doesn't give out positive vibes. And this is a positive vibes only episode. So I'm thinking a short-term extension, a three-year deal, you know, keep it around that 15, 16, 17 million a year thing. Just and he'll still be, you know, in his 20s by the time the contract is over, if he can get that far. Is that what you're feeling, or is this a
yeah,
can't answer that right now?
I can't. First of all, let me say this about Saquon. I thought he would be a good player this year as long as he's healthy. I did not expect him to get back. Actually, I shouldn't even say get back.
No, he's better.
Because he's running harder
and
more confidently than he was before.
Even he's getting the tough yards.
Yeah, like even then, not just getting the tough yards, is going to the hole. He's getting there quicker. It's not as much lateral. It's way more vertical.
Took the dancing shoes off.
Yeah, I mean, he's still going to make those ridiculous cuts. He's still going to get to the outside. He still likes to go to the outside. And look, there's nothing wrong with that at times. But I got to give him a lot of credit. He's playing as good or probably better than he ever has. Now, like you said, the franchise tag is the best option financially.
Financially.
What is it, like $10 million for a running back?
Something like that.
Well, like, it's not a crazy number, $10 million. The Giants are going to have a ton of money, too.
Right.
After they shed a lot of the excess weight that they have on their payroll. So, yeah, a short-term deal. I mean, that's always what it is for a running back anyway. No one's giving a running back legit 5 years. You have a running back, you know.
Yearning for the days of Bill O'Brien.
Look at Todd Gurley, although they had to eat a bunch of that money. They cut him after, was it one?
So you're saying the league has learned from the mistakes they've made.
There's just so few teams that are signing these guys. And if they are, I think you have to be that receiver. Now, I think Saquon will get paid, right? It's like that McCaffrey, Kamara type guy. I guess the Titans did it, but it's just rarer and rarer. And yeah, so I think the solution would be a smaller deal, 3 years, basically the first two are, you give them, I don't know, like I said, let's say the $30 million just to throw a random number out there again. $30 million guaranteed, you know. So the first 2 years, basically 2 years, $30 million, it could turn out to. And then whatever the third year, you could puff up a number for year three to make the deal look fine and dandy. And everyone knows it's essentially a 2 year deal. So that's an option. But here's what I always say about the Saquon situation at this point. And people are like, don't invest in a running back. You can't. The Giant, he's the face of the Giants. Most teams have their quarterback, right? The Giants do not have their quarterback. So to let him walk, to trade him, whatever, is going to be a lot harder to convince John Mara to do. It's their only marketable, sellable asset right now.
Yeah, but let me counter that real quick. Given what I just said about John Mara, him sort of staying out of the way, does he really not understand that winning cures all? And I understand that Saquon's been a part of that. But look at the stadiums now.
Ethan, you're talking at that point about getting rid of your only offensive player on top of it.
Sure.
So I'm just saying that would be a really hard sell.
But I think if those are two different
with the owner.
But those are two different arguments, though.
They're part of the same argument.
Yeah, exactly.
But him being a marketable face versus him being a really good football player, like not all the really good football players are marketable faces.
Right. But it's
a portion of the equation. Exactly. It's not the most important portion of the equation.
Right.
But it's a portion of the equation. If like, okay, we might have to overpay a little bit more than we would want to pay for that position, but he's good for our franchise. And we could afford to do that for 2 years because maybe they draft a quarterback. Okay, we have a quarterback on a rookie deal. We can sustain that now. We could stay in a bigger salary at running back.
Sure. And I think the Saquon decision and the Daniel Jones decision are maybe not entirely connected, but very connected.
Oh, yeah, because of money. You're saying. Yeah. Yes, the money that you pay for the quarterback compared to the money that – but wouldn't that be a weird thing to do? Saquon's the best player. And you let the best player go, and you keep the quarterback, who's in this case Daniel Jones, who's not the best player. Who obviously the premium player is the other guy.
Yeah.
You've been around a lot of coaches with the Giants. Tom Coughlin, Steve Spagnuolo for a little bit. Ben McAdoo
just got this puppy.
Yeah.
There we go. Nice.
There you go.
Have you read it?
A giant win. I literally got it yesterday. So
okay.
There you go.
Forward by Eli Manning.
There you go. Who says Jordan isn't well liked with the Giants getting bucks? Like I said, Pat Shurmur and Joe Judge, and we talked about McAdoo and Coughlin. What is it with Dable? Because from a distance, I just see somebody that's just a lot more natural, you know, like somebody that's just himself with everybody. Like, it's not like we talked about Joe Judge, and you're like, listen, Joe Judge is not what you see. He's a lot different behind the scenes. But it seems like what you see with Dable is what everyone sees, regardless of the situation, regardless where you are. Is that true, or is there like a different version of Dable that we don't know?
I think there's a hard ass version of Dable that's out there. I mean, if you talk,
but I feel like he's been hard with you guys. People, you guys ask about these
people in the past, like, yeah, but I do think he just knows how to talk to people. I don't say that hard ass in like a bad way. Just mean like he'll jump at players. He'll get it.
Oh, yeah. We saw it with Daniel Jones after that really bad interception.
You see it on the sideline during games. But yeah, he knows how to interact with people. He has a way of interacting with people and making them feel comfortable and making it feel like he's your friend. You know, that that you could trust him, that he's invested in you, that he cares about you. So I do think like what you see is what you get with Brian Dable. And that is a guy who, it's been well known, he loves to FaceTime his players.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So he would like FaceTime Josh Allen or FaceTime Daniel Jones all the time. Like just to, you know, see what's going on, you know, or go over a play with them and just shoot the shit with them. Like that's who he is, you know, by nature. So I think that does come out. You see that for the most part. And then during the games, you see that other side of him, that competitive side of him, that, you know, hard side of him, that side that wants to win, that competitive fire and all, you know, the fire that's within him. So I think the impression of Brian Dable is what he is. I mean, I think it's pretty accurate at this point.
You and him, well, not mostly you, you get really mad. I sense it, like when you ask about the injuries, and he's not very forthcoming with that. And he gets mad.
Oh,
and sometimes I in your voice I hear you're like, okay. I mean,
that's actually not really what it is at all. it's weird. It's almost like he's joking, and I don't know. People are taking it like he's mad. He's really not mad. Trust me. Cause after the press conferences, he'll be like, come over to us. He'll be like, you know, like, I'm going to give you that answer every time. Like it's, and that's just kind of like the routine of what it is. Like we have to ask him about it. See what he says. He's going to give us.
I think mad is the wrong answer. Word, but it was Wandale. I remember it was Wandale suffered an injury and you ask him, I was watching it on the Giants app. And you're like, well, does Wandale need an MRI? Is it like a season ending? And he wouldn't answer that. And and you're like, okay. And I was like, wow. I was gonna text you, but
it was slipped my mind. Yeah.
See, I pay attention to everything.
Well, look, this is the back and forth. It's very interesting. Me and McAdoo I had a really good relationship with Ben, but at the podium, it was always very contentious. Like it came off contentious, and like we would do that back and forth. And then, you know, I would email him about something later on and he would answer and it would be like, hey, how's your family? The next time I saw him, like we had that. But that was just the press conference banter back and forth. And so a lot of times people take that as something that it's really not. And unless Brian Dable's being totally phony to me, which like we just said, we
probably think
he's a genuine person.
Yeah.
It's definitely not what it's coming off as.
Sure. Why do you think they don't – I mean, it's my stupid question. Why do you think they're not like, hey, he has this injury, or hey, he's – like, why do they like to not be –
Well, Dable does come also, remember, from that Belichick
trip. Yeah.
So he in a way, he does try and do some of those things like, hey, I don't have to tell you. Like, first of all, a lot of times I'm asking him questions I know the answer to, which is why it kind of comes off as like, you know, we're not – getting along about, like, I know you're lying to me. I know the answer to this. You know?
Yeah.
Like, so we've had a couple of those already where, like, I knew the answer. I knew the guy was going to be out a long time. And I just wanted to see how he answers it. And he kind of gives, you know, very vague or doesn't answer at all. But
yeah,
that's kind of the game that it is.
Well,
really,
also,
what it is, most of the time, it's the coach trying to protect the player.
Exactly.
They feel that their job is to protect the player, and that earns them respect with the players by not putting them out there, by not putting a timeline on them, that then they have to get back by X timeline or whatever. So that's, I think, the thought process behind it for most people.
Yeah, and also, and this is sort of, it's a different sport, but I always find it interesting with the NHL. You know, like if a player gets concussion, they qualify it as an upper body injury. Yeah. Or like a lower body injury could be like a ruptured testicle or a broken toe. Like you just, right? Like they're purposely ambiguous. So that when the player, yeah, but so when the player
and everything gets
there,
out, like we always know what the injury is. So I honestly, I think it's a waste of time. I don't know why they really do it. It's not a competitive advantage. We all know who's playing. I can tell you who's playing by Thursday or Friday every week.
All right, so I'll be texting you for fantasy advice then.
Always.
Yeah.
Speaking of injuries, a guy that I'm really high on, just because I just seen this coaching staff getting the most out of this play out of players, and Wandale Robinson. By the way, I did say that Saquon was going to have a monster year. That's another.
All right, pat yourself on the back.
Victor Lap, I want to take. The other one that I do think I am going to take eventually is that I do think Wandale is going to be a contributor this season. I do think he's going to be a quote-unquote fantasy guy. He is going to get numbers. Where is he? Because, like, is he playing Sunday? I thought he was going to play in London.
He's close. He's close. Now, London, got to follow, man. I told everyone on, like, Wednesday or Thursday last week that he was he was unlikely he was going to play. Like, it looked – that means basically I like 99% knew that he wasn't.
You gotta text me these things because I don't, you know.
I got so many people who want me to
put
text
the notifications on. Put the Twitter notifications on. That's what I
do. All these people are like, how come you don't text me everything? Like, dude, when news is breaking, you think like I have time to go through like the extra 20 people to text them? Like, you text them, I'm running.
Jordan, this is why I don't bother you. I just turn the Twitter notifications on.
We got the Maryland connection, man. Like
I know.
Our relationship is different.
But this week, I mean, let's see how you got to get through practice. That's always part of the equation, which is why, like, you can't be certain with injuries, especially on Wednesday or Thursday. And we're taping this on Wednesday night. But I feel good about Wandale getting back this week, barring any sort of setback. Like, I feel like this was the week that they were kind of gearing up to.
Will he be limited running, or?
He's been on the field. Huh?
Would he be limited on a snap count or just full go?
Yes. Okay. Here's the thing. Where does Wandale Robinson play?
Slot. Everywhere, really.
Yeah.
He's Wandale a slot Robinson guy. He's too small to be an outside guy.
He does not play outside. Did not play
everywhere
except outside.
I didn't
play outside much at all. Kadarius Toney played outside. Wandale Robinson did not. He's, 5'9"? He's a small dude. So he's not a guy that you're really going to be able to move around much. Richie James has been okay in the slot. Like, they like him. He's going to play a little bit. So I don't think Wandale Robinson is going to come back right away and be playing 100% of the snaps. I don't even think that would be smart, to be honest with you, no matter what you think of Richie James. Like, when he comes back, he's going to probably split that time with Richie James. And you've seen the Giants. Their wide receiver rotation is always ongoing. And so, but will he contribute? If he's healthy, yes, he will contribute. The fact that they have no other weapons. Remember Evan Engram? He's 2017, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Evan Engram, that year, what happened? Everybody got injured. That one game against the Chargers, that's the game Odell broke his leg. Right. Victor Cruz got hurt. Brandon Marshall got hurt. Shepard got hurt. Dwayne Harris got hurt. Wide receiver / returner.
Right.
All in one game. So there's nobody left that year. So Evan Engram was the only guy left. He was a rookie. Remember, he had big numbers as a rookie because there were no other targets. So Wandale Robinson, by default, if he comes back, is going to get the ball. He's going to get targets as long as he proves he's a quality player.
Yeah, so, I mean, they drafted him for a reason. You know, they like him.
I do think he could be a quality player. I wouldn't, like, think he's going to be fantasy relevant for, like, three or four weeks, something like that.
Right.
But yeah, second half of the season, I can see that.
Significant. I want to ask you about the receiver room. One of the things that's just mind-boggling to me, and maybe you can help me out with this. Darius Slayton, to me, like, I think he's better than David Sills, and I don't think that's a crazy statement to make. And we saw with Darius Slayton on the field what he's capable of doing. I do think right now, given the injuries, he's their best receiver. Why isn't he playing? Because even on Sunday, he didn't play. Like, he played, I think, 24, 25 snaps, and he had like 70 yards on 6 receptions, was big on that key drive. Why doesn't he play more?
Well, it's pretty clear from the start, right, that he wasn't a favorite of the new regime. He was pretty much buried on the depth chart. We saw it with our own eyes, right? So you have to – let's start there for a second. There were days in practice where he was dropping everything. Like, he had – catching the ball was a problem for him. It's been a problem for him throughout his career, by the way. That was the knock on him coming out, I believe, too.
Bad hands.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so that – they saw that. And so that still exists. Plus, there's, I think this is kind of lost in the situation. What is Darius Slayton's kind of like – he can get open and make plays downfield. He's not an especially big guy. He's not the greatest blocker. He's definitely not the greatest in space. Catches the ball a lot of times with his body instead of his hands. So I think they view him as a limited guy who's not fully trustworthy.
Does last week's performance change that at all?
Hands, blocking. I think they realize we have to play him. Look, he's playing in the first place. They weren't going to play. Well, he was inactive, remember?
Yeah.
Yes. At the beginning of the year. So that's what they thought of him. All right. And there was, look, he's a useful player. He's a receiver in the NFL. Like, he's not a practice squad guy. Like, some of these guys, we can make the argument whether, like, David Sills to me is like a quad A guy. Like, he's good enough to be on a roster. Is he good enough to really stay on a roster? Like, he's in that, like, no man's land, right? Darius Slayton's above that, in my opinion. I agree with you. But they haven't been big fans of him from the start. Maybe they're finally being forced to like him more.
I think that's the case, yeah.
He produced the other day. It would be hard for them to not utilize that. He can get open. He's one of the few guys that can get open. Like, do you trust anyone else on that team to be able to get open?
No.
Saquon. That's it.
Yeah. Even then, like, Saquon's not a guy who, like, burns people on routes very often.
Right.
He did it last week. But
that was
I get the point.
That was a zone schemed up play where he's running 15, 20 yards open, nobody around him. Same with Daniel Bellinger. Same thing. Like, he's a useful player. He can make plays. But you can't just line him up and say, go win one-on-one. Like, we haven't seen him do that. Have we seen him do it at all? You know?
Soon.
What's that?
Soon. I'm a big Bellinger guy.
Okay. I mean, look, he's done a really good job.
He doesn't look overwhelmed, and that's a good thing.
He's a fourth-round rookie. Like, you have to
– and that's why his performance has been A-plus for a fourth-round rookie.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Your expectation can't be go out and be a dominant receiver when you didn't even catch passes at San Diego State.
Right.
That's just not realistic. At tight ends, I mean, you go look, even like guys like Gronk, and I'm certainly not saying he's ever going to be Gronk, okay?
Right.
But, like, as a rookie, he was limited. Like, you didn't just go and throw him in there and say, okay, he could just go beat NFL players left and right, and we could just throw him the ball in every play.
The good thing you can say about Bellinger is that he does not look overwhelmed, and that is a good thing for – short-term and long-term of the Giants. It just raises his floor, in my opinion.
He's a fourth-round pick, and he's contributing. That alone is pretty much what you're looking for from a fourth-round pick, and he's a rookie. So he gets better.
Put this to Betsy.
You got a good pick there.
Put this to Betsy, because you're my guy when there's stuff that floats around. Two things I want you to put to bed. Number one, DJ Moore, not happening.
It's going to be DJ Moore.
Not happening, right?
Remember what I said to you before about Joe Shane?
I know. Yeah,
they're not sacrificing the future.
Just for the record, maybe after
the season, like, but A, trading draft picks. How do you do that when you haven't figured out the quarterback situation?
Right.
B, he hasn't been willing to add anybody that's not on the minimum salary. Anybody.
You know what I did? You actually said that in your podcast about how they're just giving out vet minimum deals, and you were talking about Cole Beasley. So I like screen recorded that and I sent it to somebody who just kept talking about why the Giants need to add DJ Moore. So thank you for that, by the way.
Yeah, look, they wanted to add Cole Beasley.
Yeah,
they were talking to Cole Beasley a bunch of times. So Daboll is very, you know, close with him, knows him very well.
Right.
And it was a money haggle. It was a money haggle all the way to the end. Even when Cole Beasley was on Tampa. But, like, if Cole Beasley's going to take minimum salary, is he going to take it from the Giants or is he going to take it from Tampa?
Right.
And the like second Tom one. Brady. And the second one, and this was – it's gotten picked up more steam because the Giants are actually winning games. But Odell Beckham. I love
who,
me some Odell.
By the way, who, by the way, just went live on Instagram. I just got the notification. I was going to bring that up because I knew you were about to bring Odell up.
Not happening, right?
Not this year.
Just put it to bed.
Yeah. This year, no.
Thank you.
What happens in the offseason? Like, if Odell goes and plays well and they want to invest in a receiver, who knows, right? Kenny Galladay is not going to be on this roster. Kadarius Toney, who knows where he is. Sterling Shepard, he's likely gone. Like, they have to rebuild their receiving core. Who's going to be left after this year?
Wandale.
That's like
And Odell Beckham Jr. He's coming back, Weiss. He is. It's not going to be this year, but he's coming back.
I want to turn the page on that. I want to turn the page.
If I had to, I'd bet against it. But yeah,
thank you. Well, I just want to turn the page on the old stuff. I want to, like, new
stuff.
I
wouldn't rule it
out. Oh, yeah, you want to turn the page on the old stuff, yet Landon's back trashing Dave Gettleman, and it's rah, rah, rah.
I have not said anything about that. I haven't commented on that. Yeah,
we spoke about that last podcast.
No. I'm talking, like, Landon's here on a vet minimum deal. Odell's not coming here on a vet minimum deal.
No, he's not, but listen, the cap's going to open up. But I do want to talk about
Landon. Here's why they can't sign Odell this year, ready? So the vet minimum deal.
Well, he's not taking vet minimum to play for this team.
Listen, the idea of the vet minimum deal, and teams do it, is because – you have their base salary,
right?
Which for, like, let's say a veteran is $1.3 million.
Right.
And then they have a trigger for salary cap purposes where it only counts 800 and whatever, 50,000 against the cap. You can't add incentives to it. Can't add incentives
exactly.
to it. Right? That's what Odell's deal is going to be. Fine. Someone will probably give him a low salary and we'll have, just like he had last year in the Rams, $500,000 if we make the Super Bowl, $1 million if we win the Super Bowl. You know, if you score 5 touchdowns, whatever it is, who knows? You know, you can write incentives into it. You can't do that in those vet minimum deals.
Think about Odell is he tore his ACL, didn't play a full season, tore it again. I just don't know what he has left. And if it's not the vet minimum, why would anyone?
Well, someone is going to bring him in this year when he's healthy. And the Rams are practically begging him to come back. So we will see what he's got left.
It's a Super Bowl contender.
Oh, but that's what I'm saying. I never said that he would come back this year.
But I'm saying, how do the Giants make sense there?
They don't. They don't. We all agree that he is not coming here this year. Like, no shot.
Any team that gives
you asked me the question.
Yeah. Weiss did. I did not.
Any team that gives Odell a multi-year deal, I think will regret it. I just don't think he
can. I don't think any nobody
Weiss
is
the answer. He just had to ask the question. Sometimes you know the answer, you just gotta ask the question.
Hey, exactly. you do it with Daboll all the time.
There you go.
100%.
I want to talk about the defense for a second with you. This has been one of the things that I've just loved and made me such a believer. You know, like, they talk about getting the most out of guys, but, like, there are guys on the roster, specifically on defense, that I had written off. I had joked about it. I was like, I don't want to watch O'Shane Zimenez as my number one edge in week one. Like, these pass rushers got to get healthy. But they're getting – like, O'Shane Zimenez is not, like, a great player, and he'll probably never be a great player. But he's gone from a guy that's like, is this guy even good enough to be on a roster, to like, hey, this is a good depth player. And that's made me sort of change my mind on what – or how good the defense is, because they actually are building depth. So my question is, should our expectation as a fan go up because we're seeing the coaching staff get so much out of guys? Or do you think, like, hey, still temper it until you know, let's go another 4 weeks and see where we are?
I think long-term, in order to sustain success, you have to have high-level talent in this league.
Of course.
There's nobody – but it just goes to show you the job that the coaching staff has done. So eventually, I think you're going to need Kayvon Thibodeau to develop into a high level edge rusher, which he's right coming, now,
by the way,
it hasn't happened yet. Right? I mean, he has zero sacks right now.
Well, two games.
Me and Jordan have had this conversation a lot during the
season. Aren't we at three games now?
Three games?
Two and a half. That Dallas one didn't count.
Okay, sure.
Oh, because he was on limited snaps. Okay.
Yeah.
But you get the look.
He leads the league in rookies for quarterback hurries, something like that. I don't know. He's playing well. The sacks aren't there.
Okay.
Same.
They need to develop into a high-end edge rusher. He's not that right now. That was my original comment. I stand by that comment. They need Leonard Williams to come back. They need him to play at a really high level. He was doing it against the run early in the season. Wasn't doing much as a pass rusher. Dexter Lawrence has stepped up his game.
What happened with Dexter Lawrence?
They need that to continue. I mean, he was always a good player.
Correct, but he was always he didn't have this pass rush dominance that we've been seeing.
He's playing more because Leonard Williams is out, so he's stepping into a bigger role. Instead of playing X number of snaps, and he's taking his game to a new level, right? I mean, and you got to give the coaching a lot of credit, and you got to give him credit. I mean, but he was always a good player. Now he's taking his game to the next level. They need some of these guys to evolve into those level players. Xavier McKinney, same thing. Good player. They need some of these guys to get to that level in order for them to have the defense I think they ultimately want. But the way that the new regime, Wink Martindale, Drew Wilkins, who's like his right-hand man, the outside linebackers coach, Jerome Henderson, who's the secondary coach, the job they've done this year has been amazing, right? Because I agree with you. Every guy we look at, Dory Jackson, I actually had concerns about him as the number one cornerback. Me too. I think he's been great.
Yes.
Right. CeeDee Lamb had his way with him a little bit, but aside from that, he's been great. And I thought, oh God, he's a really good player as a number two cornerback. As a number one, okay, I'm a little scared. Julian Love, I thought was a good part-time piece. He's played really well. Looks like he's a starting player in this league. Jahad Ward, I thought he was just a run stuffing, you know, set the edge guy once in a while. He's been great. I think he's second on the team in tackles or tackles for loss. I mean, so
he's been a beast.
Yeah. So you got to feel good about what they are and that there's potential for them to get even better. And that's probably going to depend on Azeez and Thibodeau. Like if they could get, because they still don't have natural edge rush.
Right.
It's hard to be successful consistently in this league without that. Because you want to pressure with four. Right? If you could just pressure with four, even if it's Wink bringing four from different places, it makes you so much better.
I mean, the success they're having with their coaching staff, do you think their coaching staff could get gutted? I know it's talking too soon, but is there a...
Yeah, I was about to say, it's kind of early for that.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a coaching job that already opened up.
5 games into the season.
He's the talk of the town. I mean, they already like anointing him as a coach of the year, which I think is incredibly
tough. Oh, Dable, you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, just the overall coaching staff. Like I think it is early, but I was seeing how like Kafka's name is already coming up and like, hey, could be a head coach. Wink Martindale could finally get that up.
I still think it's probably like, you know, there's usually like a progression with these coaches. It takes a couple of years. They start to get interviews. Then they inch up. Remember, Mike Kafka had never called plays before. He took this job because he was finally going to get the opportunity to be a play caller. I'm not, unless they really have ridiculous success, I'm not sure he's going to jump to the top of the potential head coaching pool list. They have the 31st ranked passing offense up.
Yeah.
I know I'm not saying he's not doing a great job. I'm just saying from the outside looking in, what do you think random fan base would think? They hire Mike Kafka and they're like, we just hired this guy who had the 30th ranked passing offense.
Well, didn't Doug Peterson get hired with the 30th ranked pass or 30th ranked offense in Kansas City? Something like that. He was like a bottom five offense.
Doug Peterson.
Yeah.
Doug Peterson, when he went to
when he got hired by the Eagles.
When he got hired by the Eagles, he was with the Chiefs, though.
Right. And they had like a really bad offense with Alex Smith prior to.
Oh, this was pre-Mahomes, you're saying. Come on. But I mean, they had extended success. I mean, he was with Andy Reid for a while. They've had how many bottom five offenses do you think Andy Reid had?
Not a lot.
So he probably had like four top 10 offenses on his resume too, at least. You know what I mean? It wasn't just here's your one time. This is where you're at. I just think it'll be a progression. He might get.
I'm not worried about this just yet.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think we have a little ways to go before you need to worry about that. And if he has the right staff in full, he has the guys behind him that you'll be able to fill in consistently.
Right.
Tell me how I should feel because I'm very excited. Tell me how I should feel for the rest of the season. Break it down for me.
I think you should be optimistic. You should just sit back and enjoy it. I think that's what you should do.
That's
the way I'm looking at it. It's like, oh, you know what? For my purposes, it's a little different because I'm not a fan. I think you should just enjoy it, right? It's going to be a fun season.
Yeah, they've already taken down two of their tougher opponents on the schedule. Exactly. Like, let it ride.
They're 4-1, and they have a bunch of winnable games coming up. So it should be like – worst case scenario, I mean, even if they don't play well, you're what 5-5 heading into Dallas on Thanksgiving, which 5-5 with seven teams to make the playoffs, you're clearly still in the playoff race. And that would be disappointing to go 1-4 against the next five teams that they play.
Right.
Right? Because the next five are what? Baltimore, Houston. Jacksonville, Seattle.
And Houston, I think.
Houston.
And then Detroit.
Detroit, Houston. Or Houston, Detroit.
And then Thanksgiving.
Yeah, those are the five up until Thanksgiving. Right. So, I mean, if they went 1-4 in those games, it'd be disappointing. They'd be 5-5. You could still then build back up hope that, you know, it could. Right. If they go 8-9, are you disappointed?
No.
If they go 9, like 8-9, maybe you could say, I was hoping they could do better. But like, considering they're 4-1, but like, if they go 9-8,
there are so few ways.
That was a good year. It was.
Yeah, there's so few ways this team could disappoint me after this start. Like, if they win two more games the rest of the season, I don't think I would be disappointed.
It would already be one of their best seasons.
Yeah. Like, from what we've seen from the coaching staff, given the roster talent, like, I'm already just over the moon. Like, just.
Well, just remember, it was 2 years ago. You guys were probably on them board as well. Everybody, they went 6-10, and Joe Judge was great. Everyone loved.
No,
everyone
not me.
The direction of the team.
Nope.
I always feel like you can tell when a coach. You can always tell when a team or a coach peaks. Like I feel like Joe Judge peaked after that Seattle game. I think we talked after that Seattle game, and it was like.
I think they lost three of their final four after that, right? Baltimore was one of the teams that
smashed. And then Joe Judge, like I'm talking about Joe Judge's tenure. Like I feel like that Seattle game was the peak. And then you just like everything unraveled after that. He said some things about like Philly not playing his starters. And I was just like, oh my God, this is bad. And then we got into the offseason with Daboll. I mean, obviously.
Most people ate up that thing about, you know, whining about Philadelphia.
I hated it. I hated everything about it.
I didn't like it either.
It was bad. Well, Jordan. It's been a blast. Do you like them against Baltimore this week?
I mean, if you're going to say, do I like them straight up to win? I mean, no. What's the spread?
Well, I'll ask you this.
I don't know. I saw it earlier in the week, but what, like they're 4.5-point underdogs?
Something like that.
Like the odds of me liking the favorite, you know, the underdog when you're 4.5-point underdog.
I think it's five and a half.
Is not that strong. Like, it's going to be a tough game for them. Do I think they can win it? I do. Absolutely. I think it'd be a close game. Do I like them to win? Probably not. I think they'll lose a close. I said it last week. I was like, how? Going to the Packer game, I was with a buddy. I said, he's like, you think they can win? I was like, do you think they can score more than 20 points? Because you're probably going to have to score more than 20 points to beat Green Bay and Brett Favre. And Green Bay had 20 points at halftime.
Aaron Rodgers, too soon.
So I'm thinking about myself, yeah. You have to score over 20 points. They're probably screwed. And they somehow managed to get 27.
Yeah. Wow.
I don't know if they could do that consistently because they're just so limited on weapons. Right. It's just how much can you really expect from them offensively until they get some weapons back and increase their explosiveness? So it makes it tough to beat good quarterbacks and good teams. So I'd probably lean towards Baltimore, but I think they're well coached enough. They have Saquon. Their line is run blocking really well that they can hang around and make it a close game with Baltimore. And Wink is going to, you know.
That was going to be my last question. Like, do you think it's an advantage?
I do a little bit, but not significantly. Like, personnel, you know, you have the right personnel to make it work. Yeah, you know, like, he's just a tough player to stop. He's a really good player, Lamar Jackson. Great player.
I think until he comes, I'm not going to say come back down to earth, but sort of stops this, you know, him going ascending. I think Daniel Jones is a big wild card going forward. If he continues to get better, like, I don't know about you, but I feel like he's gotten better, like, from the Dallas game to the Chicago game to the game last week. Like, you're just seeing Daniel, and you know me, I'm not a big Daniel Jones guy, but if he continues to ascend, like, that changes a lot of things.
Where do you think he can ascend to? What's his ceiling?
I think he's
4 years into the Daniel Jones.
100% agree.
You should know what his ceiling is.
His ceiling to me is a quarterback that you can have where you can get to the playoffs and have an opportunity to get to a Super Bowl. That's his ceiling. Do I think he can reach a ceiling this year? No, obviously not.
No,
but if he's...
So we're on the same page. I'm like Ryan Tannehill-ish.
I think he can be better than Ryan Tannehill. I was there. I think he can be better.
Ryan Tannehill is good enough where you could win games, make the playoffs, and be a threat to go deep in the playoffs, but not really win.
Yeah, I think if Daniel Jones
perfect around him.
I think if Daniel Jones becoming Ryan Tannehill's would be absolute best case scenario. Maybe I'm just higher on Tannehill than everyone else, but like Ryan Tannehill can win you a game.
Daniel Jones can win you
a game. No, Daniel Jones can not lose you a game. That's what he's turned into. He's not making those mistakes anymore.
I mean, I thought he won in the Green Bay game.
Come pretty close to winning them some games this year. I mean, he was playing.
Almost won him the Dallas game, but
he played this past week in one drive with handing the ball off to Gary Brightwell and Matt Breda and throwing to David Sills, Richie James, and Darius Slayton.
That was my favorite game of his as a Giant.
A big game, a big thing.
Really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Of his?
Yes.
Come on. His first career start was so awesome.
It was.
It was fun, but again, just nah.
It was his first one.
He was really good in that game. Those first two games when he started, you were like, you thought that the potential ceiling at that point could be way higher than Ryan Tannehill.
We came down to earth.
But statistically speaking, but if you look
but like, at the time, if I could go back to where you were at the time,
sure,
I guarantee you were sky high.
Yeah, I was. His first start,
dude. He was throwing bombs. Dimes, Danny Dimes.
Yeah. I am where I am with Daniel Jones is not where I was his first start, but this is the closest I've been to that in his whole career.
Yeah,
I'm not a Daniel Jones fan.
This was a better win than that win.
Yeah.
Yes.
But that was that performance got you were higher on him at that point, and that was than at any point. Like,
well, I think there's just so many ways of looking at it. Like, you saw a glimpse of like, holy shit, that's what the ceiling could be. Now it's like, okay, this guy's got nobody. He's banged up, giving you the grittiest performance we've seen since as a Giant since Eli against the 49ers, and. Right. All right, like we sort of understand that his ceiling is limited, but he's not turning the ball over. He's doing it with replacement level players. And that's why I think for me, Packers game is his best as a Giant.
Let's wrap it up with this. I'm going to put Jordan on the spot.
You almost called him Daniel Jones.
I know.
Daniel. Hey, Daniel.
Are the Giants a playoff team this year? I love these questions.
I think they're going to end up making the playoffs. They do.
My man.
The NFC is not very good.
Yep.
They have a lot of winnable games. They obviously have showed that their coaching is really good. They feel good about themselves. Every year there's a team or two that makes the playoffs because of their schedule, basically. Like an average team that – but make the Eagles were that team last year. Go look who the Eagles beat last year.
I would agree.
They're really good this year.
They're really good. Their schedule is also not that bad this year. But
the whole NFC East has an easy schedule. That's why the NFC East is doing so well, partially. You know, I mean, I thought the division was going to be better anyway. But, yeah, the schedule's easy. But look at who the Eagles beat last year. Like Jalen Hurts, right? His numbers against teams with winning records and losing records was like
big disparity
on the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
So they made the playoffs. Like they weren't a great team last year. But the Giants this year, I think, fall into that category. They're not a great team. They're an okay team, but with a favorable schedule. And because of that, I think they could get to 9 wins. And I think that could get you a playoff spot now. And I thought I would have told you 9 wins before the season was crazy.
Same.
I thought it was 5.
I had him at 6.
I had 6. I thought the over-under was way higher than Vegas at 7.
Me but too.
Vegas isn't stupid. They had it at 7 because of the schedule. It's the only reason it's at 7. Think about that for a second. The Giants, who have not won 7 games since 16, right? Even before, I was thinking before then, it was like, what, 13? But they were at 7 wins. 7 wins going into this year with a new coach, not great talent.
Awful roster.
And you're like, why? The only reason was because it was that high was because of that schedule. Back
to the schedule. Yeah. All right. So they're making the playoffs. You heard it from Jordan first. Here.
I know. Look at me. Look at me.
Making predictions.
They can't call you a giant hater anymore.
I know. Look at this. Look at this optimism and positivity. They're going to say I didn't pick them to win the division now.
Exactly. All right, we'll wrap it up. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN, Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Jordan at Jordan Ronan. Jordan, thanks for coming on. We'll talk to you soon.
Anytime, guys.